Convene the Finance Committee, and Representative Hansen and members, we're one short of a quorum, I do like to start on time, so what we'll do is ask you to present the bill, and we won't take any action on the division reports or any amendments until we have a quorum present, which should be shortly, and I'll probably just interrupt you at that point when we do have a quorum. So the first bill before us is House File 18 or Senate File 119, Representative Hansen, Chief Officer of the Retired Outdoor Heritage Council, funding. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is the first recommendation from the Lathard Outdoor Heritage Council. It was a unanimous recommendation to bring us into constitutional compliance. We have the council is a hybrid between the legislative branch and the executive branch, and with the passage of the constitutional amendment, we also have statutory requirements to begin working on December 1st, and so the council has been spending dollars and it needs an appropriation for those funds, and so the bill before you is essentially an operating loan from the Water Resource Recreation Account to fund the administration of the council. That would be the expenses of the DNR staff who have been working on preparing meetings, updating the website, etc., and also the expenses of the council members. And in your packet, you should have kind of the most up-to-date information on expenses and the projected expenses for this fiscal year. Beyond this fiscal year, that process for administration funding will go through the committee process, but this is to get us operating right now, and it is a reimbursement method. The constitutional amendment funds will not start to be collected until July 1st of 2009, and we won't see them until about August 15th of 2009. So we have folks doing work. We actually have the council here. We were meeting upstairs on recommendations and have recessed. And so I have the council here and in the room showing their support for this first recommendation. And I know there are a series of process amendments when you get to a quorum, but I would be try to answer any questions you
have. We just got there. Let me convene the meeting and take care of some business, and Representative Kahn provided us with a quorum. We have the minutes for March 2nd in the folders. Representative Thiessen, did you get a chance to look at the minutes for March 2nd?
No, I'll move the minutes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, did you look at March 4th?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. I would move those minutes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius, this bill was both, I think, before your division and Representative Murphy's. Could you make the motions necessary to get the bill before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will. I will move the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division report for House File 18, the First Committee in Grossman.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius.
I move Senate File 119 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and we now have a couple of amendments. We would like to put the House language in, and then there's going to be an amendment to the House language. So, Representative Wagenius.
I move to delete the language from Senate File 119 and insert the language from House File 18, the First Committee in Grossman.
Okay, the motion to amend is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And then the amendment? Representative Wagenius?
Yes, I'll move the H-001-8A amendment.
Okay, and that amendment brings about a change, and Representative Hansen, maybe you could comment on what that amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. The amendment, I believe, was drafted by council after looking at when we made the amendment for House File 18 in the first committee. It tightens it up so that we still have the up to $150,000 appropriated for this fiscal year, but the transfer on line 1.14, the transfer of the reimbursement is clearer with the amendment. It makes it clear that it's reimbursing actual expenditures that occurred in 09 rather than just transferring $150,000. So it brings detail to that up to so that it's really reimbursement is the purpose of the bill.
And just to make clear, I don't remember if I think you referenced amending House file, and we did have the Senate file adopted. So the motion then is to amend Senate file number 18 with the, Senate file number 119 with the language then that was just described. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. The bill now, as amended, is before us. Representative Solberg, you indicated.
No.
Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, can you explain to me the need to suspend Minnesota Statute 86-706?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite clear what the where you're referencing in the bill.
Representative Biskin, she asked for clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, on page 1, line 6. Now, with the amendment, it begins, of course, subdivision 1 expenses, but immediately after that, we have the word notwithstanding Minnesota statutes. Can you explain to me the reason why we have to suspend current law in order to make this happen?
If Mr. Meyer could come forward.
For the audience, by the way, as Mr. Meyer comes forward, in full finance, we don't take general testimony. What we do is rely on the testimony coming in the various divisions, but for those that are watching, if someone has a specific question, we do draw upon that expertise. And Mr. Meyer, if you could identify yourself. And
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. 86D.076, the language Representative Biskins is talking about, is actually the purposes of the water recreation account that is established in statute. This account does draw receipts from boat licenses and also some federal funding that we receive that are deposited into the account. We ask that this language be amended into the bill just to clarify that the intent of these dollars don't meet the actual requirements of that section. We just wanted to make sure that people understood that as we're providing this temporary bridge funding to the Lasard Heritage Council.
And maybe if you might mention, so everybody's clear, that money then is transferred from that fund, and then once the dollars begin to flow after July 1st, the dollars are transferred back in. I think that's an important point for everybody to be sure to understand.
Mr. Chair, members, correct. And actually, just to take that one step further, the department has been incurring expenses on this to fund the council since November 15th, after the question was passed and turned into constitutional language. There were staffing costs that needed to be established, meetings that needed to be taken care of. So we have been funding these activities out of an account within the Game and Fish Fund that we have authority to allocate funds off of to provide this bridge funding currently. What this law would do would be to clarify that in statute and to reimburse the DNR for its expenses that are actually incurred, and to just clarify for everyone how this procedure will take place.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, can you tell us what the fund balance is in the water recreation account, both in real dollars and in the percent of expenditures?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not have the specific dollars in front of me. I know it does contain a balance that is sufficient to allow this allocation. I think the balance is about $1 million or more. I can get that for you specifically, Mr. Chair.
I would appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Packard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we did have this bill in Representative Legini at this committee, and my question remains the same. And maybe Mr. Meyer can, Commissioner Meyer can talk to this issue. But, Mr. Chairman and members, the commissioner has already set aside money for the LaSalle Council to get up and running. And if we want to have a bill to reimburse the department for the expenditures that they're occurring now and pay back that money that they set aside for the LaSalle Council to get up and running, that's the kind of bill that we could have here today. But this is not that bill. This bill is stealing money out of the water recreation account to get the thing up and running, and it's up to $150,000. I don't think we need that kind of money. I know that they tried to make an accommodation to say up to, but I just don't see that we're incurring that kind of an expense. So the issue is and remains that the department has taken care of the expenses for this council and to get them up and running, and we don't need this bill. We need a bill to maybe reimburse them once the money starts coming in. Is it July 1st or August 1st when the money starts coming? Maybe after that we can have a bill that says we're going to pay back to the department that kind of money. But this isn't the bill that does that. So I'd like a further explanation as to why this bill is here if we already have money set aside to get the council up and running. I don't understand why we have this bill here today.
Either the author or
Mr. Chairman, I should say that this is not a department bill. This is something that Representative Hansen has brought forward himself. This is not from the department.
Mr. Chair, I just need to correct that this is the first recommendation of the Outdoor Heritage Council that voted unanimously in favor. So it was not myself bringing this forward by myself. This
your bill.
This is, I'm carrying this for the council and support it. And it is, the purpose of it is to bring us into that constitutional compliance where we are, the legislature is appropriating dollars for the purpose. In addition, the bill is a reimbursement bill. That's what it does. We did just adopt it, or you just adopted an amendment that reimburses the actual costs that are expended by both DNR staff and the council members that are sitting behind it. So this bill is a reimbursement. It's reimbursing the funds that are being used, not theft, but being used as a loan to operate the council to be paid back completely from the funds that were authorized by the constitutional amendment as a reimbursement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what we're doing here is we're taking money from the water recreation account to pay back the money that's being incurred by the department, but then we have to reimburse the water rec account also once the money starts coming in. We've got the money sitting there. The commissioner set the money aside to get the council up and running. Then we have to reimburse the department. One process when the money starts coming in. I don't understand why they have to have something so convoluted. Take money from the water rec account, get it up and running, pay the department back, and then once the money starts coming in, then we have to pay back the water rec account. That seems kind of convoluted to me and wrong way to go.
Hey, Representative Savino.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, what is the DNR staff that's working with the Outdoor Heritage Council now? What can't they do that because they're doing this? You know, what's being put to the side so that they work with the Outdoor Heritage Council?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Rukavina, you can see in a letter that I've distributed to the committee dated January 22nd to Representative Wilgenius. It discusses our desire, talking about the $100,000 we've allocated from the Game and Fish Fund to provide for the administration of the council. This includes an executive director type position, Bill Becker, the acting executive director for the council. We put him on loan to the council, so to speak. One of his main duties was providing support to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Legislative Citizen, LCCMR, Mr. Chair, members, too many acronyms in my head. and also providing support in our operation management budget service division, dealing with grants and other things of that nature. We're covering those other activities by other existing staff and tracking his time and plan on being reimbursed from the Star Heritage Council. The other administrative support, much as a committee secretary, we're taking from our administrative support within the agency on loan a day at a time, so to speak. We're filling the gaps wherever we can to meet the needs of the council at this point in time.
Mr. Myers and members, I see Mr. Becker quite a bit at the LCCMR, as you do, Mr. Chair, and how much have you charged the LCCMR for reimbursement for Mr. Becker's attending those meetings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, since November 15th, Mr. Becker has not been doing any LCCMR work. I refer to him kind of as an ex officio DNR employee right now because he has been spending his full-time activities dealing with the council assigned to them. Previously, Mr. Chair, his activities with the council were being covered by the department's costs as he was working on behalf of the department. His activities to date with the LaSalle Heritage Council has been working as the council staff, much as the director of the LCCMR works for the LCCMR. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, when he did the council work for the LCCMR, he was working for the DNR as a representative to the council. As he's working on the LaSalle Heritage Council, he works for the LaSalle Heritage Council as a representative for all of these members in the room.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm satisfied with the answer because I don't see the difference between Mr. Becker attending LCCMR and keeping an eye on a number of grants and a bunch of subsidies for the DNR. It's kind of similar to this situation, so I don't know why the DNR can't find that within their current staff staffing dollars to pay his salary, but...
Mr. Chair, if you look at the language that was actually passed by the legislature on the LaSalle Heritage Council, it does require the Department of Natural Resources to provide administrative support. So with that in mind, in our discussions through conference committee the end of last session, it was always intended that the DNR would provide this support, but it would not be for free. It would be at a reimbursable rate.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, that's one of the reasons why I voted against the bill. But that's neither here nor there, I guess.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have two questions. First, there's a document in our packets that shows the LaSalle Outdoor Heritage Council administrative cost estimates from November 5 through June 30, 2009. Representative Hansen, it shows a total estimated cost of $86,124.92. My question is, why are we setting up a potential reimbursement of about $65,000 beyond what appear to be the council's own estimated expenses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, that's a good question. In the original bill that was introduced, we had the funding going through October 1st to cover the those months where dollars were coming in, that there'd be enough of a bridge to October 1st. And so the 150 was to cover more than until June 30th. When we amended the bill to deal only with this fiscal year, that's when we put the up to in there, recognizing that 150 was not likely to cover that whole, or that we'd probably not go up to that whole 150. So that if you wanted to, the 86 is the projection based on the number of meetings that we've been having, costs that are involved with the staff and costs that are involved with that. So 150 was based on that first bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, thank you. I appreciate that. I may want to have some further discussions about whether that 150 is the right amount if I'm going to support the bill or not. And we can have those discussions later. The second question I have, though, Representative Hansen, I guess, and it maybe is somewhat in line with where Representative Hackworth was going. I don't understand from reading the bill and listening to the discussion here, why is this bill necessary? In other words, what is not going to happen that otherwise would happen if we don't pass this bill? Reading the letter from the commissioner here, it looks like there's money set aside to pay these expenses, and so I want to understand why we're passing this bill today, because it doesn't make sense to me right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cole, the legislature appropriates the dollars. The responsibility that was given to the Department of Natural Resources was to administer the program, but there was no appropriation provided for that. And so it's really the authority question, and the legislature having that authority, providing the funds for that operation. That's why the bill is here.
One final question, Mr. Chair. Is the fund that we're... I'm not as familiar with the various funds within DNR. Are we talking about different funds here as well? I mean, the letter here from the commissioner references $100,000 from the Game and Fish Fund. I heard Representative Hackbarth reference the Water Recreation Fund. Can you help me understand the shell game that's going on and which pot we're taking money out of and putting money back into?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cole, initially when we sent this letter, we identified some money within the Game and Fish Fund that is not stamp related. It's revenues that are generated off of our electronic licensing system for the operation of that system. The fungibility question of using those dollars lines up with the intent of the Game and Fish Fund, allowing for the support of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council dealing with game, fish, wildlife habitat restoration, conservation, those types of things. As the bill was moving forward, the legislature decided, I think the Senate started first to look at a different account. They did have a water rec account because there was a balance in that account, frankly. That's where we requested the notwithstanding language to make sure it was clear that if you look at the intentions of that account, it doesn't fall directly within the category, but it does allow us to do this loan to the council and then to be reimbursed for the actual expenses back into that account. And the DNR would be reimbursed for our expenses that we've incurred today out of the Game and Fish Fund as well. So because of the Pittman-Robertson wild parole dollar issues, matching federal funds, we were concerned of a diversion issue with the federal government, so that's why we requested it be changed to a different account.
Okay, just a reminder to members, we are being broadcast, so if you have your cell phones on, you might want to turn those off, and also the sound system picks you up if you're having side conversations. So, with that, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share the concerns that Representative Hackbarth talked about. To me, again, it seems like we have established money for operations, per diems and mileage, mainly for the group. And we only have a few short months left when before this account kicks in and starts reimbursing the Game and Fish Fund, if that's where it's coming from. And I see no problem with that at this point in time. I think Representative Hackbarth's exactly right. It was set up to do that. We thought this through already a year ago when we set this up. Secondly, what's more concerning to me as I read the minutes of the Lasard Council is the talk of establishing a whole new bureaucracy within that group, executive director and staff and others. You know, when my folks talked about setting up an outdoors account with this 3/8, one of the reasons they did it was that this money then would be free from government bureaucracy and that this money would go right out into the countryside and be used for projects. And I guess I'm trying to understand and make a point here that I don't believe the council should be setting up bureaucracy. I think the LCC, the LCCMR, the DNR, I could probably come up with a handful of other folks who could staff and see to it that websites are upgraded and that you know, work is being accomplished, and that disturbs me even more going forward that I've seen talk in the minutes of establishing a bureaucracy for this group, which is exactly what this fund should not be doing. We should be using existing state resources to supplement that fund so that all those monies can flow out into the countryside. And so I guess I'm a little perplexed at what's going on further down the ways with this Heritage Council. And I also concur with Representative Ruccovina. You know, as we see these bills, not just this one, come through, and we see reimbursements to departments for staff, again, these aren't new staff. These are staff that are on already, that are getting a paycheck already. And so really, it's just money flowing into the department that I don't think should be happening. I guess that's a statement, not a question.
Okay, Representative Biskins.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. Question, would the water recreation account under normal circumstances be able to be used to soften any unallotment implications?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, no. It is statutorily defined in the books of what the purposes and intent of that account are.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, I think what we have then in front of us is a bill which would skirt intended use of funds in order for people not to have to make tough decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the bill? If not, then the motion by Representative Wagenius that Senate File 119 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there someone here that's on Representative Bradley's division? You're on. Would you care to make the division report motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the division report on House File 195.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. You're going to be the presenter of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 195 be considered before the committee.
Okay, that motion is before us, and we'll have an explanation of the bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Kurt Carlson and members. In the coming 2 years, we will see relatively late school start dates at September 8th and September 7th due to the late Labor Day holiday. This is problematic for school districts who are trying to live within the requirements of a certain number of school days. In my district, that's 183 required by state law. Teacher contract days, holidays, and the like. Developing a school calendar is very difficult given the parameters they have to work under. I've served on a couple of these committees in my district, and I'm here because of that experience. Graduations and last days of school for many districts will be in mid-June for the next 2 years if we do not allow them the option of starting school prior to Labor Day. There are a myriad of reasons for addressing this law, which micromanages school districts and caters to a particular industry, causing distress in local districts. And I'm going to name just a few of them. First, the agrarian calendar no longer meets the needs and activities of today's society. We must let districts make school calendar decisions based on their own students and their own area's needs. Which leads us to the issue of local control. This bill does not mandate an earlier start. It simply allows districts to make their own choice about what calendar works best for their students, their communities, and their staff. Districts are struggling to raise academic standards and close the achievement gap, yet we do not give them the flexibility to address the needs as they wish. In Minnesota, second semester AP students get several less weeks of instruction prior to taking their May AP exams, as do most other states in this country, putting them at a disadvantage in saving college costs by getting AP credits. Closing the summer gap, as some districts would like to do, has been shown to increase math and spelling retention for students. And there's other research in this area which I won't go into. It fits nicely with this kind of entire legislative effort this year of reducing unnecessary mandates. By giving districts the freedom to set their own calendar, there will be a much better match between activities that already limit travel for families in late summer, such as college start dates, both public and private, and school activities and athletics. Data shows that 88,000 youth already participate in fall sports or activities, and band came to mind and affected my family, that begin practice in August. These students and their families already are restricted in travel times at this time of year. Only 20% of the families in my community have children in school, and this is replicated across the state, so that most families are still able to travel if they so choose for holidays or whatever prior to Labor Day. Those families that have children in school are often focused on the academic achievement needs of their students as opposed to what's the best time to have a vacation. One of the arguments we've heard used is that the resort industry will be negatively impacted by an earlier start date. The schools who reside in those areas that have resorts can continue to start at the later start date. This simply allows districts the choice so they can continue to meet the needs of their community. The resort industry properties have been shrinking steadily since 1970, and there is no indication or data to show that school start has any correlation to what is happening. In fact, though, visiting their own website, their website shows a steady increase in revenue and employment over the years, even with September 1st Labor Day mandates and moratoriums that have been in place. The preference for families in spring and fall travel falls equally. So those who may want to have their vacation the first week in September can be offset by those that want their vacation in the first or second week in June. In closing, Mr. Chair, we are one of only three states that have a post-Labor Day start mandate, Michigan and Virginia being the other two. A few others have dates which range from August 1st to September 1st. It is time that we allow the districts to have the flexibility that they need to set their own calendars, and I'm asking your support for this two-year moratorium when Labor Day falls late.
Okay. Any discussion then on the bill? Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're not having testimony, but is it okay if I pass a couple of pieces out to back up my information that I'm going to present?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay, then I'd have the pages do that. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm strongly opposed to this bill for a multitude of reasons. I think it has a heavy fiscal impact, negative fiscal impact to the state of Minnesota. I'm a little surprised that Chair Lincheski has not asked for this to come into taxes. But I'll give you an example. The average, we have about 800 resorts in the state of Minnesota. If school starts after Labor Day this coming 2 years, they'll have about a 45% decline in booking. That relates to approximately $1,475 in sales tax, and I'm using a very low figure. I'm not including places like Craigens Resort or very large resorts. That's $1,180,000 just from the mom-and-pop resorts. So that's a heavy impact. A part of the testimony that Representative Norton talked about was scheduling schools, and she mentioned athletics, band, and football, and I'm very glad she did, because while band and football and other activities are tremendous in the state of Minnesota and a good thing for folks to do, that is a choice that the student or the parents make, that that football player or person that plays the saxophone is going to attend those things before school starts. But that really doesn't have anything to do with the start date. They can start band and football pretty much whenever they want before school starts. So that's really a non-factor. The comment that Representative Norton made about the resort industry shrinking. Yes, that is common knowledge. The resort industry has been shrinking. It's been doing, a lot of them have been going to condominiums or different focuses of trying to keep the idea of a resort alive. But in today's economy, and the nation's economy, this is simply going to be devastating. And I don't want to just talk about the resorts, but I think if nothing else, I've read in the paper about Representative Norton's bill, and it's, I guess the paper's reporting it a little deceiving, because the paper claims it's going to put a moratorium on the Labor Day school start, and there'll be a study to study that impact. There isn't. I was going to say, if it was, that we'd study it before we do this rather than after. But in what I handed out First of all, one came from a Mr. Joel Carlson, who represents Congress of Minnesota Resorts. In there, you'll see Independent School District 196. The first page is the 08 and 09 school year that starts September 2nd and ends June 12th. You go to the next page, it's the 09 and 10 school years with Labor Day school start staying as is. School starts September 8th, it quits June 11th, one day earlier. My gosh. In 2010-2011 school year, school starts September 7th, ends June 9th. So there's simply no change in that school district if we don't change Labor Day. I'm going to speak a little bit to the state fair. I'll leave the University of Minnesota to represent Kahn. But I know in the state fair has lost, in 04 they lost 58,000 visitors simply because of the school start date was before Labor Day. They did have some bad weather and they lost about 100,000 visitors. This year they would lose probably approximately 150 to 200,000 visitors because school would start so many days into the, into the fair. They were also going to lose the 4-H. In 04 the 4-H dorm buildings were closed for 3 days. They'd probably be closed 6 days this year, and it might even be difficult for 4-Hers to do the fair at all unless they get excused, which I'm sure schools would do. But I think the state fair, from the estimates that I've seen, would lose between $1.5 million in revenue. It also would eliminate not just the 4-H, but the revenue factor. The kids that work at the state fairs, they're not going to hire kids 16 to 18 years old because they can't stay there. They can only stay there 5 days. Going back to the resort industries or simply the convenience stores, the bait shops, hotels, motels across the state where kids work, they're going to have to leave work a week to 10 days early. Again, Mr. Chairman, I'm strongly opposed to this. I don't think this is a time with the economy the way it is that we should roll the dice and take a chance. There was also a poll taken in the Star Tribune newspaper last week, should Labor Day stay the same or change, and it was 64% to stay the same, 30% to change, and 6% no opinion or undecided. So that, Mr. Chairman, I'll end my arguments for now.
I would be happy to address a couple of those pieces of data, and I have a handout which I know is in the audience if anyone wants it, but I did go back and look at the state fair attendance because I was afraid this might come up, and in fact the state fair attendance, when the law was changed to be allowed to start as early as September 1st, the attendance actually went up and did not decline, and I have a record of since 1987, and there's no concrete data that shows that the school started to have an impact on that. I also would address the calendar issue. I brought my calendar because it was one of the ones that was being held up as an example at one of the last committees, and there was a little bit of deception. I just want to be clear. Many districts are waiting for this bill to pass. They have created duplicate calendars. My district is one of those, and while their start date, it's about a week difference. Their start date would be August 31st if given the opportunity, and they would graduate kids on, and last day of school would be June 4th, as opposed to a September 8th start and a September 11th last day of school. So it does shift a week, and that would be their preference. And in the past, yes, because of the Labor Day start date, school districts have had late graduations. They've been forced to have late graduations and late last days of school because of the law that we have on the books. And they would like the flexibility not only in the next 2 years. I think they would prefer to have the flexibility all the time. This is not a repeal. This is simply a two-year moratorium. And I'm going to stand behind my school district, and if you look on the sheet that MSBA handed off, this does have the support of the Minnesota Business Partnership, Minnesota School Board Association, School Administrators, World Education Association, and others.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I do want to address the sales tax issue, and I think I do understand why Chair Winchesky probably doesn't need to hear this bill in taxes, because I believe that the economic argument is really a red herring. Now, it's a very important economic argument to the resorts. I understand that. But what we're talking about is families' discretionary income. to make the argument that if they can't go to the resort, the money's going to sit in their pocket and not be spent at all is I think, a fallacious argument. For me, I have no resorts in my legislative district, but I've got Valley Fair, I've got Canterbury Park. Maybe people stick around home, right, and spend that discretionary dollars in those venues. Right. But the bottom line is, we talk about the economic argument. I think that's a red herring. Are they going to spend the money in the end of the summer, or are they going to spend the money in the beginning of the summer? Right. If it's discretionary dollars, it's probably going to be spent, and the revenue address will probably be realized. As we look at, Mr. Chair, our current state budget issue, and we're looking at how we can help different governmental entities, including public schools, maximum flexibility, relief from mandates, I think is something that's going to be very important. This is a simple relief from a mandate. I think we should all get aboard.
Hey, Representative Houseman.
I think I heard it clarified. I was out of the room and wanted to be sure there hadn't been an amendment. It is permissive language, and it is only for 2 years?
Absolutely. Yes. Mr. Chair, any further discussion, Representative Rufino?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, and I don't have any resorts in my district, but I really realize the importance of this issue to the Ma and Pa resorts out there. And members, I guess it's ironic that Representative Norton picked probably the worst 2 years to try this that you could pick. They're the worst two economic years since World War II and even before then. I don't know about statistics or numbers. I'm not very good at them, but I do know that if you stop families from spending that Labor Day weekend out there in rural Minnesota at a resort, it's going to hurt those resort owners. I don't think this is the right time to do it, Mr. Chair and members. And I know, let me just give you, the tourism industry has been tough enough. In the last year and a half, 23 businesses on the main street of Ely have closed. In fact, they lost their only car dealership 2 weeks ago. They ought to drive in Ely now, that wonderful mecca that a lot of us love to visit on the way to the Boundary Waters. They got to drive 45 miles towards Virginia or 50 miles to buy a car. And this is just going to hurt them even more. We don't need to put another nail in the coffin for rural Minnesota. You talk about mandates and micromanaging down here at the Capitol. I think one of the biggest sins that has been done recently in the school districts is taking the seasonal rec property off of the operating levy. The only wealth that a lot of these rural school districts have now isn't there for them. St. Louis County Schools, as an example, has had 3 failed operating levies in a row. And a lot of their only businesses are resorts. So, members, this isn't the right time to do it. And Mr. Chair, maybe we could try this thing, but maybe we should try it in 2012 and 13 and 2013 and 14 school year, when hopefully the economy picks up, because we're losing small Main Street businesses, and in this sense, I guess they're not Main Street, but they're out there in rural Minnesota. We don't need to lose any more businesses, and I think this is going to cause a problem. And I listen to my good friend Representative Solberg most of the time. There are a few times when I don't. But Representative Solberg is well respected in his community as a teacher, and he has said on more than one occasion that, that teaching period from when Christmas vacation gets over to before Easter vacation starts is one of the most disciplined times when kids really buckle down and learn. I've seen a lot of school districts in the metropolitan area, and I don't know about Rochester, that the kids come to the Capitol because they have a break in that time. And last week, in fact, one of my colleagues here at the Capitol had their a couple of kids visiting the house floor. I think it was last week. I said, "What are you kids doing?" "Oh, we're off this week." He said, "Well, you must be a lot smarter than our kids up north." But there are a lot of breaks that happen at other times during the year for a lot of metropolitan school districts, and I don't know Representative Norton about Rochester, but I know what this drill, the effect it's going to have. You can throw all the numbers out there, you can throw all the statistics, but it is going to have a devastating effect at a time when our economy is in turmoil and we're losing small businesses left and right. So I would hope that we could maybe set this bill aside or look at some different dates out there farther out, you know, into this coming decade. So.
Okay, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sympathize with Chair Rucavina's concerns over the economy, and I have those concerns. It's not just the resort industries, it's all industries, including businesses in my community and everybody at this table that are hurting right now. I'm not unsympathetic to the time. But I do need to say the reason this bill is here now is not my fault. I didn't set the calendar in the world. Labor Day is falling when Labor Day falls, and it falls very late for the next 2 years. That's why I'm here today. So, again, I'm asking for you to allow local districts to do what they think is best. It's not a mandate. It's just a two-year moratorium.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little rebuttal to Representative Biskins. He mentioned it being a red herring, the issue, and he said that there's only so much money that can be used for entertainment or so much money that people have. Obviously, there would be no need for a Racino because nobody has any more money to go anywhere else. But that being said, Labor Day is the largest vacation weekend and week prior to Labor Day in the state of Minnesota, where people from Minnesota vacation within the boundaries of Minnesota. It's huge. Many folks from Rochester come up to the resorts and other areas. And again, it's not just the resorts. It's also the airline industry loses bookings when school starts before Labor Day. Folks just shorten their plans. And I was going to hope that Representative Kahn would mention the great University of Minnesota, which always starts after Labor Day. It's a good example to follow. They're smart people over there. And again, I'm strongly opposed to this bill, and I would ask members to vote no.
And Representative Kahn happened to be next on the list. Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I'm actually not going to get into that issue. I liked it best when the University of Minnesota started at the end of September. I thought that was a really good time. But I just want to ask a question posed to either the chairman or to perhaps Representative Norton or perhaps Representative Biskins, is that do you think that Representative Rucavina would be much better in statistics and math if he had had to start school before Labor Day?
Madam,
that's the chair, best place Mr. to chair. Represent Rucavina, not the chair.
Mr. Chair, my Rucavina. Point exactly, because we started in August back then, and I didn't learn a damn thing.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Biskins moves that House File 195, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in general orders. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. Will all those who vote in favor of the bill please raise their hand? Opposed? There being 11 for the bill and 13 opposed, the motion fails. We will be meeting next Monday. Please note that the bill referrals have been attached to the agenda, so you know what division the various bills are before.
Wouldn't have mattered.
And with that, meeting is adjourned.